Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save, and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine. And as always, it is a pleasure to be with you. It feels like it's been a long time coming, but the curtains are finally drawing on the year that was 2024. Don't worry though, dear listeners, this is not the last episode of Friends with Money for the year though. We've got a fascinating episode lined up for next week, plus more to come throughout the summer, because in podcast land, the episodes never stop. Today, we really wanted to carry on what has become a bit of a tradition on Friends with Money though, to take the opportunity to look back on the year and some of the major events and stories in the world of personal finance and banking and economics and investing that have really stuck with us. So joining me today for our look back on the year that was, the year of 2024, is Money's managing editor, Vanessa Walker. Vanessa, thanks for joining us on Friends with Money.
My pleasure, Tom.
All right, let's get straight into things, Vanessa. Where should we start?
All right, Tom, start with the hardest one to me. Tell me all about crypto and what's happened this year.
I know you're selling yourself short there, Vanessa, because I know you know about cryptocurrency as well, and you've been talking about it recently on the podcast, so you can't fool me, but I'll happily dive into cryptocurrency for a little bit, because there's no doubt that 2024 has been a massive year for cryptocurrency in a couple of ways. So for those that remember, at the very start of the year, the US Securities and Exchange Commission approved 11 spot Bitcoin exchange-traded funds, ETFs, for the very first time. Since that decision, the SEC also approved the very first spot Ethereum ETF, which is the second largest coin by market cap behind Bitcoin. And we've also seen similar spot Bitcoin ETFs begin to hit Australian exchanges. So in essence, Australian investors, and I guess investors abroad as well, now have the ability to gain exposure to cryptocurrency via an ETF for the first time, which, you know, for many will be a more familiar way of investing than, you know, necessarily holding cryptocurrency outright themselves. Then the second major event has been this massive price spike that we've seen following the election of Donald Trump in early November. Without giving a kind of a play-by-play of each cryptocurrency, the value of many of the major coins has skyrocketed. Bitcoin, for instance, was trading around the $100,000 mark, that's Australian dollars, just prior to the election. But at the time of recording, it is over $150,000. And I know you discussed this on a recent bonus episode of Friends with Money, Vanessa, but Bitcoin recently breached the US $100,000 mark for the first time as well, which has been seen as a bit of a significant milestone. So all in all, a busy year for cryptocurrency and, you know, by the looks of it, a very rewarding one for investors that hold cryptocurrency.
And absolutely in the ascendancy under Donald Trump, yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it'd be interesting to see what happens next year as well. So moving on from cryptocurrency though, Vanessa, why don't you tell me about another major kind of story that's continued on this year, which is, you know, obviously the cost of living.
The cost of living, she says in a deep, heavy voice. Well, the high cost of living has, of course, been a red hot issue over the past year. So much so that in 2023, in true Aussie style, we coined the phrase "cosilives." Now, of course, a bit of background. The main tool we use to measure the cost of living in Australia is the Consumer Price Index, CPI. The CPI is calculated by the Australian Bureau of Statistics, and they basically track the change in price of a fixed basket of goods and services each quarter. There's also monthly CPI indicators, just to confuse things. Now, in essence, the cost of this basket, its change, keeps us up to date of the effects of inflation. And the basket itself contains a range of items households buy in Australia, think food and non-alcoholic beverages, alcohol and tobacco, clothing and footwear, housing, furnishings, household equipment and services, health, transport, communication, recreation and culture, education, insurance and financial services. Our lives all in one bundle, our spending all in one bundle. Now, the ABS also publishes other cost of living indexes, and some of which are reflective of the change in of the range of household types in Australia, like retiree households, pensioners household, employee households. Now, back to the core of the issue. This year, the cost of living kept rising. Over the 12 months to October, CPI was 2.1%. However, the good news is that it's the lowest annual rise since July of 2021. Now, the culprits this year for the rise, the biggest price increases were experienced in food and non-alcoholic drinks, and that was 3.3% to October. Recreation and culture, that rise was 4.3% to October, and that was due to the higher demand for international travel, still post-COVID. And a whopping 6% rise that we're paying for our vices, alcohol and tobacco. Now, there is a silver lining, and that is because some things in that basket, they kept going up, but there was a big drop in the cost of electricity. And that fell 35.6% in the 12 months to October. Now, the electricity price drops are due to the combined impact of the Commonwealth Energy Bill Relief Fund rebates and state and government rebates in Queensland and Western Australia. And they're going to be, they were applied from July this year. So what's next for the cost of living? The next CPI quarterly data will be released on January the 29th next year, 2005. And meanwhile, the government, facing an election next year, they are trying to reduce the cost of living. They're using a range of measures, including tax cuts, more on that soon, higher Commonwealth rent assistance, cheaper medicines, boosting wages for aged care and childcare workers, and providing targeted support for low-income earners through initiatives such as bulk billing incentives and student debt relief. Tom, tell me all about interest rates, where they've been and where they're going.
Well, it's so related to what you were just talking about in terms of the cost of living and inflation in particular, Vanessa. I guess I was thinking about this before we came on. If I was going to give out a prize, any prize this year, I think I'd give out a dud of the year award to interest rates, or more specifically, the lack of movement that we've seen on interest rates and the kind of hype that we've seen surrounding a cut this year that just hasn't materialized. So just to kind of, update everyone on the current situation, I'm sure everyone's aware, but the Reserve Bank held rates again in December at its December board meeting. And that means that it's done and dusted for the year, meaning that the official cash rate will remain at 4.35% going into 2025, as it did going into 2024. So as I said, what's been really interesting to see is the shift in expectations about a rate cut throughout the year. There are plenty of pundits that penciled in a rate cut in 2024, but those forecasts have been continually pushed back and back and back again throughout the year. And at this point, the latest expectations from, these experts seem to be that mortgage holders will have to wait until May 2025 before the RBA cuts rates. But who knows? As we've seen this year, that's the question we have to ask ourselves. Who knows? More importantly, though, the result of a year of no change to the official cash rate and, obviously flowing on to mortgage rates is that homeowners with a mortgage have had to continue to deal with the relatively high loan repayments that they've been paying for the past few years now. So still not an easy time for many.
Yeah, very tricky.
That is mortgage rates, that is interest rates. But tell me about something that you mentioned already, something that's been a little bit brighter for households in the way of income tax cuts.
Yes. So in a year of really bad economic news, tax cuts have been a very welcome thing. Now, fun fact, there are 13.1 million taxpayers in Australia, and this affected all of them, plus a trickle-down effect of their dependents, etc. So, in short, the Labor government's Stage 3 tax cuts came into effect from July the 1st this year, And those tax cuts were basically a tweaking of the tax rates and the tax brackets, i.e. how much you pay depending on your income. Now, the government reduced the 19% tax rate to 16% and the 32.5% tax rate to 30%. Then when it came to tax brackets, the threshold for the 37% tax bracket was increased from $120,000 to $135,000, and the threshold for the 45% tax bracket was increased from $180,000 to $190,000. Now, how much does this add up to in real life? The annual savings ranges from $354 to $4,529, depending, of course, on people's taxable income. The $4,529 gain for the top income earners actually adds $87 to their disposable income each week. For others, the savings are more modest. If you're on an annual income of $50,000, for example, you'd save $929 over the year. So that works out to be just under $18 per week. That's about three coffees.
Three coffees, not a lot.
Take from that what you will.
Yep.
Okay, back into more kind of technical, exciting things. Tom, tell me about NVIDIA and the Magnificent Seven.
Yes, I'd love to. It's definitely been one of the biggest stories in the world of investing this year. The Magnificent Seven, as people in the world of investing like to call the group of stocks, which include Alphabet, which is the parent company of Google, Amazon, Apple, Meta, which is the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, Microsoft, NVIDIA, and Tesla. So really, these are some of the largest and best-known companies in the world. And the price of shares in these companies over 2024 has just soared. So for reference, at the time of recording, Microsoft is up just under 20% year-to-date. Apple and Alphabet are both up 33%. Amazon's up 50%, Tesla is up 60%, and Meta is up 78%.
Oh my goodness.
Huge, huge gains. The real story, though, has yet again been NVIDIA, which, you know, for those that don't know about this company now, produces graphics processing units, which have obviously been in high demand during the recent AI boom and, you know, might well continue to be in high demand in the years to come. So NVIDIA's share price has increased by 180% over the course of 2024. And at one point a few months ago, it even overtook Apple as the world's most valuable company, at least by market capitalization. So away from the companies themselves, which have obviously had a great year, this has obviously also been good news for investors who hold shares in them, either directly or who have ETFs with exposure to these companies. So happy days for them this year.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Lucky them.
Lucky them. Vanessa, let's move on to a group that hasn't been quite as lucky this year. Australians who have been facing the challenges of housing affordability.
It's still a real problem in Australia. The median value of a home in Australia this year edged over $800,000 for the first time, despite the rate of price growth easing. Now, this new high was reached at the end of November, according to PropTrack's latest home price index, and it follows 23 months of consecutive growth. Of course, there is a disparity based on location. The median value of a home in Sydney is $1.112 million, or nearly $250,000 more expensive than that of our second most expensive city, which is Brisbane. Brisbane comes in at $868,000. However, the biggest takeaway is that over the past 12 months, property prices have increased by 5.53% right across the country. Now, that's good news for existing homeowners, but a huge challenge for those getting into the market. Just as an aside, at present, a household would need an income of about $278,000 to buy a $1.4 million home in Sydney.
Wow.
Yeah, an impossible situation for so many people. Now, Tom, tell me about student loan changes. I think that's a little glimmer of good news, yes?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I feel like student loans like HecSHelp and, you know, all the other schemes that are out there really kind of came into the spotlight last year with that massive indexation jump, which saw outstanding loan balances increase by 7.1%. Unsurprisingly, that increase kind of sparked a lot of anger and outrage from current and former students. But that's all changed this year. The federal government, after some pushing by the crossbench, I feel like is fair to say, announced earlier in the year that the indexation rate applied to student debt would be changed to avoid the kind of massive increase that we saw in 2023. And that was recently passed by Parliament. So going forward, indexation will be based on the lower of the consumer price index or the wage price index. So the consumer price index was the metric formerly used by itself. The new method will also be retrospectively applied to balances in existence as of June 1, 2023, which means that people will be receiving a credit on their loans or a tax credit if they've already paid off their debt very soon, if they haven't already seen it. That was the kind of major change to student debt this year, but it wasn't the only policy announced in 2024. The federal Labor government also recently announced that if it is re-elected, it will wipe 20% of all student debt, roughly $16 billion. Obviously, there's a massive asterisk next to that, and we'll have to wait and see what becomes of it. But I'm sure it's something that students and former students will be keeping an eye on next year.
Excellent.
Vanessa, we are running out of time, but there's definitely one more area that I'd love you to touch on, and I'm sure you're keen to touch on as well. Can you tell us about the very best of the best for 2024?
Best of the best.
The best to last, as we say.
Look, this is a shameless plug, but also the probably one of the best things that our readers can read up on at the end of the year. Our best of the best issue is out now. In it, we let you know the best ETF managers, the best superannuation funds for a range of products, the best flexible home loans, credit cards, term deposits, investment, car loans, green loans, right down to the best actual cars, ICE and EV, and to top it off, the best wines and some fantastic summer reading. Pick it up. It's on newsstands now. We'll be kind of unveiling the 109 winners online throughout the next month. But here's a little spoiler to end with. The cheapest flexible home loan across all kind of lenders, banks, non-banks, boutique banks, and customer-owned banks, is the digital lender Unloan. And its a comparison rate starts with a 5. That's what people should really be aiming for. Another few tidbits. The best ETF manager in Australia is Vanguard Australia. The best super fund by performance is Mind Super, soon to be rebranded as Team Super. And the best online share broker is Superhero. That's enough from me. Buy an issue. It's $11.95. You will get hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars of savings. And you'll find all 109 winners in that issue.
As you said, Vanessa, I think that's some excellent summer reading for people to do. And if anyone's like me who likes to kind of rejig their finances throughout the summer at the start of the new year, then what a kind of a great asset to have next to them, the best of the best edition of Money Magazine. I think that's an excellent place to leave things for today. And I think we've covered an absolute ton of ground. It's amazing to look back on some of those stories and think, was that really this year? Anyway, Vanessa, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
That's it for this episode of the Friends with Money podcast. But don't forget to jump on our website, moneymag.com.au, for your daily dose of financial news. We can go grab yourself a copy of the latest edition of Money Magazine in all good newsagents. As always, Friends with Money will be right back in your podcast feed next week. So until then, I'm Tom Watson. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.